Now this is my kind of party. Grab a friend, bring the guns. It's time for the Co-Opticast.
It's a spooktacular. Can I be corny like that and say edition of it?
You could.
I just did. Damn it, too late. So it's October 31st, otherwise known as Halloween here in the United States. And I don't know, does the rest of the world celebrate Halloween?
The rest of the Christian world, I believe.
Okay. So anybody, I don't know, we don't really celebrate Halloween. We just
gorge ourselves on candy and football.
Partake in it.
Yes.
And my daughter went trick-or-treating. You said your daughter had a little trick-or-treat thing the other day, so...
Yeah.
We're down the other end of it. We used to look forward to going ourselves to get the candy, and now the kids are going to get the candy for us.
Well, there is that, but we also have the best part in that we get to go hunting on deals for giant bags of candy.
Yeah.
And you usually do it at the beginning of the month, and by the end of the month, when you actually need it, you've eaten it all.
Yeah, we ran out of candy, actually. We had no idea how many people we would get. And we made about, it was 2 hours of trick-or-treat, we made it about an hour, and we were out.
Yeah, normally, I live in an apartment complex, and we usually don't have too many trick-or-treaters. Last year, I believe we answered the door exactly twice, and this year, there was something like 40 kids.
Wow.
Yeah, so, needless to say, the candy that was left over from what we had bought was not enough.
But the worst part about it now is it's cutting into our game time. So that kind of sucked.
I guess.
Yeah. So what have you been playing?
I've been kind of busy lately, but I have been playing an awful lot of Fallout New Vegas in my gaming time. And it makes me very, very happy. It is so good.
Despite the bugs?
You know what? I playing it on 360, and just today I found my first bug that was something that I would actually care about, and it's nothing that is completely game-breaking. It's that I put a weapon mod on a weapon, and now the weapon is invisible whenever I pull it out.
Nice.
So, like, it still works, and VATS works and everything. It's just, I have, my hand is floating out there with nothing in it, but I can still shoot stuff.
Gotcha.
But... You know, I was a really big fan of Fallout 3, and I think this is a much better game than Fallout 3. The content seems a little more in line with what I'd expect from a Fallout game. You know, maybe it helps that a lot of the guys that worked on the first two games worked on this one. But it just seems like the tone and the type of content that's in it is a little closer to what I'd expect. Like, there's... You know, Fallout 3 had its moments of levity, but this one sure has some great ones. Like, do you remember the Lady Killer perk you could take in the in Fallout 3, where you'd get special dialogue options with certain female characters?
Yeah.
Well, they added on to it in this one, and male characters sometimes get a Lady Killer option. Like, I found a guy who was in search of his father. And you're talking about him, and then all of a sudden I get a Lady Killer option, where you can role play being afraid that he's actually your son. It's just it. There's a lot of little stuff like that I think really adds to the experience, and it's, you know, it's not as oppressing as the DC Wasteland was. You're not underground nearly as much, and it's. It's a lot of fun, and the enemies don't seem particularly invincible like they did early on in Fallout 3. I mean, if you were level 3 or 4 and you ran into a super mutant, you had to run.
Yeah.
But now it's a lot easier to take them out. And the companion system got a nice overhaul. There's a little fly-out wheel that you can use, and I only have two companions so far, but one of them is an Enclave, like the Enclave robots that would sing like the national anthem and stuff in Fallout 3.
Uh-huh.
I have one of those with me, and he can carry all the, he acts like a pack mule.
Nice. Nice.
Like he has a laser gun and a buzz saw, and you know, he can melee or take stuff out from afar. But you can also put like all of your really heavy stuff on him, and he doesn't have any type of encumbrance, so you can basically dump your entire inventory on this guy, which is pretty great. And he has a very charming little victory theme he plays every time you kill an enemy. It's kind of like I'm playing a Final Fantasy game or something.
Yeah.
But I'm having a lot of fun with it, and there's just so much content in it. It's kind of unreal. I've put... you remember how quickly, like every quest you did in Fallout 3 would give you, like, a 20-point achievement?
Yeah.
I'm about 12 hours in at this point, and I have only gotten 3 of those completed. Wow. Like, I'm still hovering around, like, 100 achievement points for this one. So there's a lot left to do, and in the faction system that they put in, it makes it so that if you piss off a faction enough, you can eliminate entire chains of quests that you'll never be able to get access to. So it looks like I'm going to be playing through it multiple times.
Cool.
And I also fired up Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light to download the DLC and get the online co-op patch. Unfortunately, no one was online who wanted to play it when I did, so I played a little bit of the single player. And the game's still really fun. And if someone can tell me how you actually play the challenge levels, I'd love to hear it, because I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, we definitely have to play that then, because I picked it up and I haven't played any of the co-op yet. I didn't have a chance to find a local partner when I bought it, so we'll have to play some online.
Okay, as long as you can put up with the fact that I roleplay the two as having a ton of sexual innuendo at one another.
It wouldn't be any other way.
Something about Totec's massive spear.
Okay. that's about it then for you?
Yeah, I've fit some World of Warcraft in there, but that's really about it.
All right. I've been getting some good gaming. I've found myself staying up a lot later lately, so I've been getting some late-night sessions in. Still playing Civ 5 here and there. I'm on my third playthrough of that.
Can you call it a playthrough?
Well, whatever. It is. Each time you play, it's 12 hours. It's a playthrough of a game.
That's right? True.
So, yeah. Halo Reach, I am one mission away from my solo legendary playthrough. So that's good. I'm seeing the light at the end of the tunnel there.
Yeah.
Def Jam Rapstar. I was playing that today with Izzy, actually. She was dancing as I was rapping.
That's amazing.
And I was singing Push It by Salt and Pepper, and she was singing Baby, 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 Baby.
So, that's so what you're saying is when I brought Jade over, she didn't really know that Jade was a baby. She just keeps saying baby repeatedly.
Well, no, she knows the word, so she was just repeating it. It was kind of funny. What else? I played some TF2 last night, Team Fortress 2. I was talking to you during the time I was doing it, because I died a lot, so I just sat there waiting.
You had to watch that counter time go down.
But I was playing their new Halloween content, which is pretty fun. And they have this new... The mode has this boss character in it, and he's the headless horseman, or headless horseless horseman. And he randomly spawns at one of the capture points, and he doesn't fight for either team. He goes after everybody. Basically, you get tagged it. And to get untagged it, you have to melee another character, and then he'll chase that character
awesome.
Or player. But it adds a pretty interesting dynamic to a versus game to have this like really badass like guy that's going around hacking you with a giant axe as you're trying to capture the point and stuff that he's, you know, that he spawns at.
Is he hard like the boss at the end of a round of Killing Floor hard?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really good comparison, actually. He takes a lot to bring down.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it was pretty cool. I had a lot of fun. I was playing with the Colony of Gamers folks. So I'm probably they play every Thursday, so I'm probably going to jump in this Thursday and play a little bit. What else? Fable 3. I played a ton of Fable 3 last weekend for our review, and I've still been dabbling in the after-game content. So I've probably have like 20 hours into that now. I really liked it. I think it's my favorite Fable of all three, just because the quests that it have are very, very rich in story, and they're very clever. Some of the characters from previous Fables make a return, actually, like the Ghost Brothers from Fable 2.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that quest. They're back in this one. They have another quest. And basically, one of them has you get the Necronomicon again, and he conjures up a ghost party and gets drunk and goes on a bender, basically. And you have to help out his other brother.
Those games are so damn British.
Yeah, they really are. And there's another really genius quest where you get shrunk down and play in a Dungeons & Dragons game. you hear the Dungeon Master doing the voiceover the whole time, and it has like little like paper characters that you're fighting and stuff through the whole thing, and you can see, it's great too, like style wise you can look up and you can see the three guys that are playing the game around you, these giant like heads and stuff. So
I've heard there's a lot of really inventive stuff in that game, but I guess some people are there. I guess there's a gameplay shift at a point in the story, and either people like it or they hate it, it seems.
Well, the problem is, so here's the big problem is about 10, it depends. There's a lot of side quests to do. I think I beat it. I completed 45 quests. But I completed the majority of those in the time before you become king and or queen. And mm-hmm. The thing is, like, up until that time, like, it comes a point in the game, it says, like, from here, there's no turning back, right? It lets you know that, like, from this point on, you're kind of, you're on the path to the end. So once you do that, and then you actually do become king, you have a certain amount of time to do something before the end game. But it tells you it's a year, right? And the game starts and says, okay, this is day 365. Then it's like, this is day 318. You don't really know how many days you actually have. And I think it jumps from like day 112 to one day left.
Oh, man.
And so you kind of get blindsided, because I was like, you have to have a certain amount of money to do a certain thing. Okay, I'm trying to not spoil it. So I thought I was doing okay. And then when it did that jump, I got screwed. So that's kind of the disappointment. And the thing is, the king thing, when you're the king, it's kind of cool. It's a different pace. Like, you have to sit before the court, and you judge, you make decisions for your kingdom. And they're very difficult decisions. There's things like, you can drain Bowerstone Lake to mine its resources and get this much money. On the flip side, you're ruining the entire environment and all the property value of all the places around it. So it's like, what do you really want to do? Or it might be like, the one I really liked is you can, I think it was a factory building, or no, it was restore an orphanage and shelter, or you can turn it into a whorehouse. Right? And like, the whorehouse gives you like a ton more money, but the orphanage thing might cost you some, but it, you know, gets people off the streets and this and that. So it does a lot better job with the decisions you have to make, with being more gray than black and white.
No more pet the puppy, kick the puppy decisions.
Yeah, it's not that straightforward. It's a lot of times it's the lesser of two evils. I really liked it. I'm glad they let you, after you beat it, go keep playing, do some of the quests, and depending on how you did in the king setting, it really changes the world at the end.
Seems like the co-op would be a good way to explore the changes that someone made to their world.
Yes, it really is. Because, like I said, so I actually chose to drain Bowerstone Lake because I was really, really hurting for money. So that area looks really different. And then when you go back to it in someone else's world, it's, you know, nice and pretty. The co-op, I like the co-op. And even though they made it so you can bring your own person, you can bring your dog and your money and all this stuff, it doesn't add a whole lot. It doesn't scale the difficulty or anything. The game's already easy as it is. There's no difficulty settings.
You still can't die, right? You just get kicked down, and then you get a scar and get
and
back
I
up.
I didn't even get knocked out my entire playthrough. There's an achievement for it, actually, and it's incredibly easy to get. If you get knocked out once, I'd be surprised.
I got knocked out once in Fable 2 because I really just wanted to see what happened. because I was at the end of the game and I hadn't even come close to dying yet, so I just let myself get knocked out, and I couldn't even see the scar I got.
So yeah, you just, I mean, you lose some experience, like your some experience stuff, and that's about it. But
I've heard the guild point system is kind of a love it or hate it thing as well. Since
it's basically a skill purchase system disguised in a pseudo menu kind of a thing. It's not that different, I think. But you can read our review on the site. I talk quite a bit about it. I don't know. I'm so torn if I like it more than Fable 2 or not. I really liked Fable 2. But anyway. What else? I've also been playing, I've downloaded the Red Dead Redemption Undead Nightmare content and played a bunch of that. Some of the single player story and the survival mode that it has.
And I've read that stuff takes place after a certain point in the story, so now I'm really afraid of booting it up.
It does, and you know, I haven't beaten it yet either. The only thing that happens, I think, that can spoil it is basically John is back with his family.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so short, that part in the beginning, that I don't feel like I ruined anything. It's funny though.
John Marston has a family?
Yeah, come on. That's the whole point of the game.
Well, he doesn't open up about that for a while, if you remember. You play for like an hour or so before you hear about it.
Yeah, I guess so. But the content's great because it's kind of vintage Rockstar not taking itself seriously. So right away his wife and child get bitten by a zombie and they get turned. And so your first quest is to lasso them up and tie them up. And so you do that and then you drag them in the bedroom and then he like a cutscene. He goes and he gets some plates of food and he puts it next to him and he's like, all right. And he tells his wife, he's like, don't bite the kid. He's like, kid, keep an eye on your mom. I'll be back. And he walks out and it's just, you know, it's a lot of this like kind of, you know, tongue in cheek humor and stuff. It, you know, it doesn't take itself seriously. So
I think they described it something like the same actors in a different movie.
Yeah, that's a pretty good, that's a good way to put it. The survival mode's a lot of fun too. There's a good variety of maps to play on. There's at least like six or seven that we counted. I played with Andrew the other night, and there's this new kind of zombie they have. It kind of runs like a hybrid of like a monkey and like a wolf, but it moves really fast.
Are you sure it's not an animation bug?
No, it's not. It's creepy look. It's creepy looking the way they do it. And when you see like a couple of them coming across the plains with like the low sun and stuff, it does a really good job of freaking you out.
Cool. All
right. So we talked enough about the games we've been playing. Let's talk about the news we've been reading about. First news, just fresh out this week. Monday Night Combat is getting its first DLC and it's free.
Yeah. No thanks to the cert process.
Yeah, I guess they've really had a problem with their stuff being hung up in certification with Microsoft. But the content is going to add two new maps, one of them being a co-op map. And it's also going to add a new co-op mode called Blitz Extreme, I think is what it was. Let me open it real quick. So, nope, Super Sudden Death Blitz. Same thing, right?
But it sounds like a Genesis game or something.
Yeah, but they don't really say what exactly it is, just that it's going to be intense and incredibly frantic. So maybe, I don't know, maybe one death.
Well, sudden death.
Yeah, I guess.
And no Blitz, date on that, I mean, I'm imagining, you know, arcade football, where, you know, you kick a field goal and you win.
Maybe.
No.
I don't know. But, yeah, next month it's coming out. They don't have a hard date, actually, yet. But, like Mike was saying, it's kind of stuck up in certification alone. I think the patch came out. I remember I was posting a story about the patch being out, but the content's still in certification.
Well, I think we'll get to the story right now, but the Borderlands patch also got hung up in certification.
Well, actually, it wasn't certification it got hung up in. It actually got hung up in testing at Gearbox. And the reason is, this was something actually Mikey Newman told us during our co-op night. They had to test this patch against every quest and every area in the entire game. Because unlike the other like patches in the DLC where they were just testing a subset of it, this actually affects every single area and stuff in the game and the balance in those areas. So they had to check it against that. So that was why originally we were told that it was going to be out about the time of the Game of the Year edition, which was earlier this month, earlier in October. But now it looks like it's going to be sometime in November till we get that. And that's going to raise the level cap depending on what content you have, either level 58 or 69, I believe, or the two. 58 if you don't have General Knox, 69 if you do have General Knox. Yeah, so that looks like it's going to be pretty good. I still haven't even hit level 50 with my character, so I'm not too worried about it.
Well, I'm just sad that I played through the new Robot Revolution Robolution with a level 50 character, and I used my second playthrough because I figured it was going to have higher level players in it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, hopefully this patch will make the content just a little harder, because I was about 10 levels higher than everybody when I played through it, and it was essentially I would, you know, go into my special ability and mow down room after room after room, and I think I died once the entire way through it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like 44 and 45 are the sweet spot levels for that content.
Yeah. But I was getting like one experience point for every enemy I killed the entire way through, and I did the entire DLC and gained one level.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Talk about another patch. This time it's a pretty huge patch for the game AI War, which is a PC RTS, which now is also available on Mac, and that's thanks to an engine overhaul by the team at Arkane Games. They ported the entire game into the Unity engine, which is a... actually, I think Unity supports a web browser, too, so I wonder if they're going to have this runnable running on in a web browser, too, with that plugin.
Maybe.
But, I mean, AI War was never the prettiest of games. It was always a lot of 2D graphics and stuff like that. So now, apparently, there's a bunch of 3D effects, and he...
Pretty explosions.
Yeah, explosions and stuff. And I know a lot of the ships and stuff in the game, they're still sprites, but they re-rendered them at a higher resolution and tweaked some things. It also, the music in the game got remastered. There was like 143 new ships. Just tons and tons of content. And if you own AI War, it's free. And then all future versions moving forward is going to be utilizing it. So give the game a shot. I think right now it's actually on sale on Steam for $10. And yeah. So that was good news for fans of AI War. I know the game was really popular on our site for a while in terms of, like, we have a little popularity tracker.
Yeah.
And the game's database page for that. It was always in the top five for a couple months. So.
And I do know that I believe we gave it a favorable review as well.
Yeah, I think we gave it a 4 out of 5. So, moving on. Are you hoping to see the original Halo in HD?
Yeah, I played the PC version. It was pretty okay.
Exactly. That's why I don't understand why this is so hard. But apparently it's not...
I've also played Halo in an Xbox 360 at 720p.
Yeah. I don't know what the big deal about this is and why there's people like clamoring for it. First, it's not that old, and like you said, everyone kind of still has access to it. The whole HD remake thing is kind of for those games that you can't get anymore or have a hard time finding.
I think it's in people are expecting Microsoft to answer Sony's habit of taking like God of War and Sly Cooper and the Team Eco games and doing an HD update of them.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's for them to make a Halo, like, up-resing Halo is not going to make it any prettier. It's just going to make it smoother. And if they were to, put it in a modern graphics engine, I would expect them to, like, overhaul it. And at this point, I think I'd rather just have a new Halo game.
Yeah. So yeah.
But not too soon, because I don't want to see it become a yearly series. But I think Microsoft is going to take exception to that wish of mine.
But yeah, so the Microsoft guy basically said it's not on our to-do list. If we see a time and a place to do it, then we'll do it.
They should just port it to Windows Phone 7.
That would be cool. Let's move on. We talked about this earlier. Lara Croft in The Guardian of Light now has online co-op on the 360 anyway. The PS3 and PC versions are still waiting for their online co-op patch. 360 owners also have a free piece of content you can download, and like Mike said, right, the content's the challenge, the extra challenge.
Challenge pack, yeah.
Yeah. Someone tell us how to access it, because...
See, I wasn't sure if it's actually new content or if it's extra challenges for the levels, but admittedly, I spent about 30 seconds trying to figure it out, and when I couldn't, I just dropped into a single-player level.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully, though, for PC and PlayStation 3 owners, they'll get their patch soon.
Yeah, because that game is awesome, and being able to play it online is going to be pretty good.
I hope the online's smooth. Like, I hope it's nice and lag-free and stuff. So we'll definitely have to give that a go. Maybe we can update our review as well if it is troublesome. What else? Speaking of online, the original Doom was pulled from Xbox Live Arcade. And the reason for that is the rights expired. Those rights being, I guess...
went from Activision to ZeniMax.
Yeah, so Activision had the original rights, and since ZeniMax Media purchased its software, now they needed it. So basically, the money had nowhere to go, and it's pulled until those rights are renegotiated. It's kind of interesting to see this stuff kind of popping up now, where games disappear because licensing rights don't exist anymore, and this and that. Like, if you bought it, you still own it, but otherwise, you know, no such luck. It's not like when a game goes out of print because of that, right? They stop printing it.
Yeah.
You still have a chance of finding it because there's that physical copy. You can still acquire it. Now it's just like, it's done. You know, it basically vanishes into thin air.
Or more to the point, I played Doom on, my launch Xbox 360. And when that died and I got a new one, I didn't bother reinstalling it.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Microsoft, if you've already purchased it, I believe they never, take it completely away from you.
Yeah, you can still re-download it.
Yeah, but it just brings into light the problems of digital distribution. It's the old argument of people who like physical media of, well, what happens when Steam goes away? Yeah. What happens to, all 8,000 games I bought for 50 cents each on a Steam sale?
Curse you, Steam sales.
Curse you. I know, they're the worst and the best thing ever at the same time. But it's a valid question. I mean, I still have all my old NES games, and I can play them very easily because I own the media. But as we move closer and closer to pure digital distribution, what's going to happen? Like, when companies go out of business, what's going to happen? Like, even in recent memory, I remember there was a company that put the digital version of Prey out, and they folded, so everyone that bought it digitally was screwed until, some whack solution came around.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how companies handle this in the future, because I feel with big companies, when they disappear, generally the rights get bought up, but like indie games and things like that don't necessarily have a home.
Yeah. Hey, well, if you you don't care about all that stuff, you don't care about your games possibly disappearing and all that other stuff, you can get a PSP Go. The price been cut. They dropped the price $50 on the system now.
Yeah, now it's only $30 more than a PSP.
Yeah.
I will defend to the death the PSP Go as a nice piece of hardware, but I believe when I wrote my review that I gave it a good review and then said don't buy it, because
yeah, he basically did,
because it is like as a piece of gaming hardware, I love it. I like the pure digital distribution model. I hated the UMDs. I like that it was smaller. I liked the form factor. It felt more comfortable to use. Had, you know, better features with the being able to basically do emulator save states of games and flip back and forth between them. You know, that, like, all that kind of stuff was really cool and a good addition to the PSP. But at $250, there was no way I was going to tell you to buy it when you could buy something with equivalent hardware for at least $50 less, if not more. You know, and all you had to do was up the storage of it, and bam, you've got a PSP Go.
Yeah.
But, you know, they cut it to $200, and I don't think it'll really affect sales at all, but the PSP hasn't really sold any hardware to speak of in the past year or so. So
yeah, now we're starting to get the PSP 2 rumors.
And you saw the stuff on Engadget about the PSP phone, right?
Yeah, well, the PlayStation phone, yeah, but it's going to be a completely different platform.
Well, we'll see.
Like, because basically the way they're talking about it, it actually runs Android, and the games for it are going to be the PlayStation 1 games. There's not going to be any of, like, the PlayStation Portable games supported for it and stuff. It's, like, a completely different thing. Like, I don't know what they're doing.
Well, I don't think Sony's really... they've put out, like, the PS3 has gone from kind of a laughing stock to a really serious competitor. You know, releasing at $600 and, you know, not really having, you know, great exclusives. Other than, you know, they'd get, like, one huge game a year, and then everything else was just kind of, like, the 360 version of multi-platform stuff was usually better. Yeah. And things like that. But, you know, now that the it's got a competitive price, and, you know, they've added Move, they've added 3D, and Blu-ray had won the format war, you know, it's way easier to recommend someone buy a PS3 now than it used to be, but they seem to have a bit of trouble lately in launching hardware. I mean, the original PSP, you know, the PSP, I think, was almost $300 when it came out, and yeah. So it had, you know, and it didn't have really any super great software, so it sold slow but steady, but it never took off the way something like the DS did. And I'd really, you know, the only thing that's keeping them from being this generation's Sega is the fact that they're not throwing new hardware out every 6 months.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with the phone, but, you know, I think you kind of have to go the Apple route with it if you're going to compete in that space.
Yeah.
Like, iPhone gaming is a completely different type of gaming than, you know, what we would traditionally think of as on a handheld. I mean, every now and then you get some, like, I think Square's porting Final Fantasy Tactics to the iPhone. You know, things like that can work. I'm not sure how well it's going to work, but, you know, most of the gaming you play are those quick 5-minute burst things, and the iPhone and Android have basically made it so you can make really, really high quality games of that type. Things like Plants vs. Zombies work really well. But in you know, the touchscreen format, you know, I don't want to, you know, don't give me a Metal Gear Solid to play on it.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to do it. Something like an RPG might work really well because you don't really have to, you know, finesse the controls, but, you know, something like a first-person shooter is going to play like crap. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just really confused. Like I said in my PSP Go review, is like, I don't know who this is for, and if this PlayStation phone is just like PS1 ports... then I still don't know who this is for, because I can play those on my PSP and my PS3 already.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of anxious to see how Windows Phone 7 does, which I think launches next week here in the United States. Because Microsoft is, if there's one thing that they do incredibly well, it's provide development tools. And the... you know, I played a little bit around with the Windows Phone 7 development tools already, and they're very, very mature. And for anybody that's, you know, an XNA developer or a C-sharp developer, any of those other things, it's incredibly easy to build an application, and they have a ton of frameworks and templates right there, and you can basically get something up and running in no lie, 10 minutes. And I think if they did one thing right, I know we're kind of getting a little off topic here, but they're doing one thing right in that they're very, very strict on their hardware requirements for all of their phones. And that's always been a problem with the Android platform in that...
Buttons are all in different places, UI has changed in all of
different,
them.
Different hardware configurations, different screen resolutions. It's kind of all across the board, and it's tough for an Android developer to know exactly what he's developing for, and he has to test for a lot more configurations. It'll be interesting to see how the Windows Phone 7 stuff does. But anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about BlizzCon was last weekend, and we got a few tidbits of news out of it. The first being that Blizzard's going to release some official mods for StarCraft 2.
Yay!
They're going to be free. And one of them is going to actually be a co-op mod, and it's going to be based on the... I'm trying to think of the name of the mission. Outbreak.
Outbreak, yeah.
The
night-day cycle with zombies.
Yeah, so there's basically like an entire colony that's infected, and you have to clean them out. And the way they did it for the mod is it's, you know, infinite survival as long as you can kind of a thing, but it's co-op. It should be out, I believe, this month. I think they said most of them are going to be releasing this month, with the Defense of the Ancients one next year.
And speaking of the Defense of the Ancients one, how about Blizzard and Valve going against each other with Dota?
That whole thing. I'll tell you what, in the past 6 months, I have seen more pissing matches between developers and publishers and stuff than I think I've seen in the past 5 years. Like, direct... like comments by, like, you know, like people like on Twitter and to the media and stuff about things. I don't know. It almost doesn't sound professional. A lot of it.
Well, like Blizzard, Blizzard handled it pretty well. They said they weren't really sure what Valve was doing because it was kind of a community mod, and the Blizzard Dota is kind of a community mod. They're releasing it for free.
Yeah, the thing is too, if you really look at Valve, yeah, I know they're on a pretty high pedestal with most of the PC gamers, but most of their biggest franchises and stuff has all been mods that they've bought and acquired and made their own. Team Fortress, Counter Strike,
Day of Defeat, Portal.
Yeah, like they've all been things that were mods or.
To be fair, Gunman Chronicles really sucked.
I don't even know what that is.
It's way old.
It was kind of funny because when I was playing Team Fortress 2 last night, they still have Half-Life 1 sound in that game.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, you still know where it comes from. I don't know why people are so shocked that Valve is doing this. There is a lot of politics behind the whole Defense of the Ancients thing. And if you want to look it up... There's a lot of internal strife going on inside Valve with Defense of the Ancients and where it's going and who actually is creating it and blah, 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 blah.
I think it's less to do with Valve making a Dota than the guy that they hired to help out with it.
Anyway, look for this mod this month and... I don't know. It should be fun. Free is good. I still have yet to finish StarCraft 2. I have to do that.
Finish it already. It's not that long.
I know. I just...
It's not Red Dead Redemption. You can do it in under 10 hours.
Yeah. So the other news out of BlizzCon was Diablo 3's final class was unveiled. And I've seen a lot of mixed things on this. But she, as it was revealed as the female version, is the Demon Hunter. And she seems to be kind of like a thief kind of character.
She's a combination of the assassin and the Amazon.
Yeah,
WoW hunter.
She had the five special attacks they revealed were pretty interesting. There was the molten shot, the boa, entangle, grenade, and a fan of knives.
Which, yeah, is a signature ability of the WoW Rogue.
Okay,
cool. Yeah, they're definitely borrowing from themselves. Just like WoW pulled a lot of its abilities out of Diablo 2. Mm-hmm. Diablo 3 looks like it's pulling a lot of stuff liberally from World of Warcraft. Which is fine, because a lot of those abilities are really fun and class-defining.
Yeah. The Molten Shot looks especially neat to me. Basically, it's an arrow that drips lava as it shoots. And you can see kind of like the trail on the ground, and the guys can run into it and get lit on fire. There's a video up on the site of that you can check out on the Diablo 3 site.
I like the ability where it looked like she was lashing at characters or enemies to one another and slowing them down. And, yeah. And then if they got, it looked like if they got too far apart, it would detonate.
Yeah, but my favorite class still is the monk. It's one of the only ones I got to play. Maybe that's why, but that's what I'm most looking forward to if and when we ever get that game.
Oh, we'll get it.
Not gonna. Chances are, what do you think? Do you think it's going to come this year? You think they're going to do it?
No.
Yeah.
I think, here's what I think. I'd be willing to bet that the game is at a point where they could ship it, but being Blizzard, they won't. They'll just keep working on it until they're happy with it.
Yeah, they had
they certain... have they have infinite money.
I'm trying to think of the quote that just came out of the one producer that basically said, like, we have all the features that we want in place, but now we just have to build the content around it. It was something to that,
yeah,
that effect. But I just want to quickly... The classes, if you don't remember, we have the Wizard, the Witch Doctor, which was the first one that was revealed, along with the Barbarian. He was the other one revealed. The Demon Hunter was just revealed, and the Monk. So I think what I like about the classes, all except the Barbarian is probably the most straightforward one. But all the other ones are pretty much hybrids of past classes.
Yeah.
With I think the monk probably is the most unique in that I can't really think of what he would borrow from any of the other classes in Diablo 2 or Diablo 1.
Well, you know, there was some... The hand-to-hand stuff is assassin. Because yeah. The assassin used, like, the wrist knives, so... And the combo points and things like that. I believe the monk uses a similar mechanic.
But they had said that this game, more than all the others, that the classes are going to really play different in that. For instance, like the combo system, like you mentioned with the monk, he's the only one that can have it and use it. And I think the barbarian had like a rage mechanic, you know, and he's the only one that's going to have that and stuff. So there's going to be a lot of gameplay styles, actually, with how you play with that character that is different for each one, so this should be pretty good.
Yeah, as much as I want Diablo 3, I see so much of the things that they put together in WoW being ported over, like combo points. The warrior class in World of Warcraft uses a rage mechanic. The hunter class uses something called focus now. That was a recent change. I'd imagine that it's going to find its way into Diablo 3 at some point. The whole, like, the crafting and material gathering and things like that, it's going to add a lot to the longevity of Diablo. Even though it's not the most traditional type of MMO, I would still say Diablo 2 is one. With persistent online characters and the sheer amount of character building there is. They're going to try and do the same thing with Diablo 3, and part of me almost wishes that it would go, there would be some kind of subscription component to it that they could keep pumping new content through, like, maybe not a monthly subscription, but something like mini expansions where they do a big content push, and, you know, maybe you pay $5 for it when it comes out, and just increase the amount of stuff in the life of the game. I think it would work really well, and, you know, if you don't buy it, you don't have to.
Yeah.
Would be nice. But I'm all about games keeping themselves fresh. I mean, it worked so well with Borderlands. Think of the number of times we played through that game, put it down for months, and then had something new and completely different and fun to do. And you pay just a small fee for it, and there you go.
I think Rockstar is doing a really good job with Red Dead Redemption with that as well. I mean, that game came out in May. And they've been pretty, it's been pretty, like, every 2 months, you know, a new content pack, whether it was free or premium,
yeah,
has come out.
And it worked really well with Mass Effect, too. And not all the content was great, but the latest bit that they pushed out, the Shadow Broker, was probably better than some of the content in the actual game.
Yeah, that's one of the games I'd like to go back and play the DLC.
Yeah, definitely play the Shadow Broker, because it actually has ramifications for Mass Effect 3. Okay. Like, the other stuff you could kind of take or leave as a side story, but this one is directly influences the decisions of a major series character.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right, let's kind of wrap things up here. We've been talking for a while. Trine 2, it's now been confirmed for a 360, PlayStation 3, and PC release.
Hooray.
So that's good. No more it's coming to this platform, or it isn't coming to this platform.
No, no like more Trine. Publisher shenanigans.
Yeah.
Who's publishing what and where.
And Halo Reach, the campaign matchmaking update went live, as well as a firefight update. That was about a week ago. Campaign, you can basically, it works like the versus multiplayer. You join it, and then it has players voting on which mission they want to play.
Mm-hmm.
And then firefight is now the longer, it's a full set for the matches, so it takes about 30 minutes or so to play through.
Nice.
I played a match the other night just to try and kill some time, and the format's so much better. The way they originally had it launching, it was just, you never got a good feel, and you never got in a rhythm.
You never got in a rhythm, and you never lost.
Yeah. So, this was a lot more fun. That's about it for the news. Let's talk about our little feature section. And since it's Halloween, we thought we'd talk zombie games. And the best co-op zombie game out there, maybe, I don't know, it doesn't have to be the best. Let's just kind of discuss some of the ones. Yeah, our favorite.
Or we can just talk about them.
So I'm going to go down the list, and then maybe I'll go down and we'll talk about them. So we'll lump the first two together, Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2. Probably the games that really made it popular again, I would say, brought back the zombie co-op genre.
Yeah.
The zombie game to begin with. I mean, sure, we had Dead Rising a couple of years ago, but again, the first Dead Rising wasn't co-op, but I think Left 4 Dead, like, once people saw how popular that was, I don't know. It just seemed like after that, we just got a ton.
You know, it's one of those things, you know, Valve put out this great game, and, you know, people were, you know, you remember when Left 4 Dead came out, there were the four campaigns, and you could blast through them fairly quickly, and everyone said, oh my god, you're charging full price for this tiny little amount of game. And, you know, there's the verses, and, you know, the fact that they play pretty differently every time you go through. But a lot of people were clamoring for more co-op zombie content, and you started seeing things like Nazi Zombies come out, which was a side mode, but, you know, I think that was the best part of Call of Duty World at War.
Yeah.
And you see the revival mechanics and everything, I mean, you see in a lot of games these days, but there's an awful lot of stuff that looks like it's been influenced at least by Left 4 Dead, and I love those games. They're some of my favorite of this generation, and Left 4 Dead 2 is just an incredible game, much more so than the first time. It's so much more atmospheric. There's so much, like, the variations on the theme, as it were, are so much better. Like, the probably one of my favorite gaming experiences this generation is the Dead Rain level, Heavy Rain, Hard Rain. I forget what it's called, but
Hard Rain.
You run through the level, then you have to run back through the level in like crazy monsoon weather, and you can't see anymore.
Avoid the witches and stuff. Yeah,
it's just like, it's so intense. I mean, I was freaking the F out the whole time I was playing that, because, you know, you're being hit by everything the game could throw at you, and you could barely see. You lose the ability to see where your partners are. You can't hear them because the rain's too loud, and it's just it's so fun.
Yeah, I mean, my first experience with Left 4 Dead was actually
PAX?
At E3. No, oh, it was actually at E3, and it was before anybody really knew anything about it. And I was with Scott Benton of In-Game Chat, and we went in the Valve's meeting room, and they had it kind of set up, and we're like, oh, you know, this sounds interesting, and we're working through that first level in Mercy Hospital, and the guy's there, and he says, you know, he's like, you want to avoid the car because it sets off the alarm that attracts the zombies. So we shoot the car. It was like, yeah. And just that first experience of those, you know, the music kicking up and all those zombies running at you, and it's just like, you know, that adrenaline.
Yeah, the first time that happens, especially in co-op, is great. I mean, my first experience with it was that PAX later that year, and it's just one of those games that begs an audience, you know, four of you running and doing your thing, but everyone watching, you know, what's happening. I remember, you know, the audience, you know, the audience that was in line was just cheering everybody on. It was a fantastic experience, and you're right, like shooting that car and having hundreds of zombies come screaming out at you, it doesn't get much better.
Yeah. So we also had, you know, Zombie Apocalypse, which was a top-down shooter that was released on PS3 and Xbox Live Arcade, I believe, last year. It was a pretty good game. It's the neat concept it had there was it had environmental hazards that you could lure the zombies into. Like there was like a wood chipper, and there was a airplane jet engine you could get them sucked into. There's a couple other interesting things. So it was a pretty fun game. I believe that was a game that they gave out for free then because of something they did wrong. Or was on the list of... I'm thinking of Microsoft at this point.
I honestly don't remember. But I did remember an unfortunate game that I could add to this list.
Okay.
There's Hellgate London.
Oh, jeez.
I don't think I need to say anymore.
Yeah.
Everything about that game was unfortunate.
Yeah, there's a lot of, on the list we're looking at here, there's a lot of arcade games that have come out. Zombie Wranglers, which was kind of a fun, more kid-friendly zombie game. The kids are, you know, the zombies were cartoonish, and you actually played as little kids that had vacuums that sucked up the zombies. it was a pretty neat little game. Burn Zombie Burn was a PlayStation 3 or PlayStation Network downloadable game where... it was more point-based, more arcade style. You were trying to set as many zombies on fire as possible to get the maximum points there. There's one coming out on PlayStation Network pretty soon from the Super Stardust HD developers called Dead Nation. And this one looks really close to Left 4 Dead. It's got the special zombies, and they even, like, you know, there's, like, the Boomer special guy. There's the Hunter special guy. Like, they have their own names for it, but... they act almost exactly the same.
I recall from the screenshots that the UI even looked a little similar.
Yeah. I mean, the game, though, looks absolutely gorgeous. It's really, really pretty in motion. So I'm looking forward to checking that out when it comes out. What else we got here? We already talked about earlier in the podcast, we talked about Red Dead Redemption and its Undead Nightmare DLC. One thing I didn't mention when I talked about it was... just the style of it is, you know, off the charts. They changed the fonts and all the menus and stuff to kind of be this cheeky horror kind of thing. They have if you watch the trailers, the voiceover guy that they have in the trailers does voiceover stuff throughout the game as well. you know, so it's like a classic horror movie kind of a thing. I mean, for $10. It's the production values and stuff for that. I don't think you can really find anything that equals it. Some other popular games. The House of the Dead series, great co-op zombie killing.
Those are some of my absolute favorite ones because you know, back when I was in college, we had a Dreamcast and the two of the light guns for it, and we had House of the Dead 2 and a 70-inch projection TV.
Nice.
And it was the kind where you could still use a light gun on. I forget if that was front or rear projection or whatever. It was this huge big screen TV, and we were playing. We would basically get drunk and play House of the Dead 2 for like hours every night. It was epic. But the, you know, I love light gun games, and House of the Dead is absolutely one of my favorite series for that.
Yeah, those are great games, and I guess in that series too, you got Typing of the Dead.
Typing of the Dead is
strangely addictive.
One of the best experiences ever. If the game isn't great, the act of playing it is.
Yeah, and then similar to that is Rock of the Dead, which isn't actually part of the House of the Dead series, but it just came out, and that's the Guitar Hero meets House of the Dead. I guess the reviews for it haven't been so hot.
Everybody knows that a zombie can't stand the sound of a guitar.
Yeah. What else? We had Resident Evil 5, which people, you know, they'll argue whether or not they're actually zombies in the game.
They're zombie-like.
Yeah. And what else? Did we miss anything? We talked Dead Rising 2 is probably the most recent one. I didn't get to play it. Have you played it? Did you pick that up?
I have not.
Yeah, I'm gonna wait for. I'm hoping a near Christmas sale for that one.
Yeah,
I'm counting. I remember last year, it was right around Black Friday. Amazon discounted so many of the fall releases to like under $40.
Yeah, and my thing with Dead Rising 2 is that I think Case Zero had the opposite of the intended effect on me, in that
it scratched the itch.
It scratched the itch, and I didn't feel I needed to drop $60 to get more.
Yeah,
but I did give him $5, which is better than nothing.
Yeah.
But there's also the everlasting classic Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
Yes.
From the I think it was on both the Genesis and the Super NES, but that was 2-player co-op that had a kind of a kitschy horror theme. Yeah. There are giant baby enemies and zombies and all kinds of fun stuff. And I really loved it. It was great fun. My little brother and I used to play it a lot. But yeah, we were putting this list together, and it was really hard to think up classic games that, you know, basically, like, Dreamcast on, we couldn't really think of anything else, like, that came before it, other than Zombies Ate My Neighbors. And I'm actually interested in hearing our listeners and or readers input on this, because I guarantee you we missed a ton.
Oh, yeah, there's got to be.
Yeah, because I'm a huge retro gamer, so I would love to go dig up some of these oldie but goodies.
Yeah, so let us know. Send it to our tips at cooptimist.com email address, or
post it in the thread, or
we'll have a voicemail number at the end of the show. You can call in and tell us about something too.
Yeah.
So let's wrap things up. We've been yapping long enough, I think. And let's see, upcoming releases. We have Fist of the North Star, Ken's Rage for 360 and PS3. I guess it's a Dynasty Warriors style game. It's
based on 80s anime.
Yeah, I've never seen it. Apparently it's pretty brutal. It's like supposed to be ultra violent anime, right?
What I remember of it was pretty violent.
I think I saw Andrew had mentioned something about it, saying it was like super ultra violent. Then we got the two Activision games competing head to head on November 9th. You have Apache Air Assault for the 360 and PlayStation 3.
For those of you that think the helicopter level in Black Ops is rad, Apache Air Assault.
There you go. And then, Black Ops as well. It's coming out the same day, 360, PlayStation 3, and PC.
I'm really interested in seeing how our review of that turns out.
Yeah,
I've not heard a lot of things about the co-op in that have made me happy.
Yeah, they've done a lot of backtracking with it. And
Treyarch, you are not Infinity Ward. Please do not try to be Infinity Ward.
Yeah, it really...
Look what happened to Infinity Ward.
Yeah. I know, you know, Jim is all about Call of Duty, and he was pretty angry this...
He's also a big Treyarch apologist, and he was not happy.
Yeah. So we'll see how that turns out. Some site stuff. We had our Red Dead Redemption Under Nightmare review. a DJ Hero 2 review, Fable 3 review, Kirby's Epic Yarn review, Spectrum headset review, NHL 11 review. Can you see the trend here? We reviewed a ton of crap, including a bunch of single-player titles. Hydrophobia, Super Meat Boy, Quantum Theory, Enslaved, Comic Jumper, Jam Party Be the Music. So we had a busy couple of weeks here with reviews and content. And I know we got a couple more coming this week. I'm going to have a Time Crisis Rising Storm review. Mark's going to have his Rock Band 3 review. We'll have our Kinect review.
Spoilers. Meh.
No spoilers yet. I'm curious what's going to happen with that because technically, we didn't get a review unit. I was in the beta, so I've had Kinect for
months.
Yeah, like 2 months now. I've got a really good feel of it. I don't have any final software yet. I'm close to getting at least Dance Revolution,
Dance Central.
Thank you, and the Sonic Free Riders game. And I also ordered the Ubisoft Your Shape Fitness Evolve game.
You should let Izzy review that one.
I might. Maybe I will. but the embargo time for the Kinect reviews is the launch date at 12:01 a.m. So basically, once everyone can buy it, that's when you're going to see the reviews. That's when we'll post our review. But we're not part of the places that are able to do that technically, so I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm doing it anyway because
we're awesome.
Whatever, you know. So we'll see. I'm gonna do some video of me using it this week, you know, showing how it works, showing the voice stuff.
Can I post the video that I took of it?
Actually, yes, I do want that video. I think it needs to be in there.
It does, and it is. Let's just say it stars a community member.
Yeah. So yeah, that'll be this Thursday night when Kinect releases. We'll have that review. What else? We had some site features. Conduit 2. Tally put her preview up of that. There was a we did an interesting community thing with the Halo Waypoint team, where I played some firefight with one of the team members over there, and they recorded it, and we did a little kind of like podcast thing, but they posted a video of that, and you can check that out over on Halo Waypoint. Jim posted his kind of review impressions of the Liars and Cheats pack and the Left 4 Dead, the new content for that. That's about it. It was a busy, busy month for the site. I hope you have bought one of our shirts. If you have, buy another. If you haven't, buy two. They can be bought from our Split Reason store. You can find a link on our site, or you can go to splitreason.com/cooptimus. If you're listening to us in iTunes, please leave us feedback. Follow us on Twitter. We are Cooptimus without the dash. And like I said earlier, we have a voicemail. You can leave us a voicemail at 646-926-6748. That is our show.
Hooray!
We did it.
We did it. And it came in at just under an hour.
Yes. So this is the Cooptimuscast episode number 54 for Sunday, October 31st, 2010. Thanks for listening.